Hello, you are listening to the Nintendo Switch UK podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode number 136 of the Nintendo Switch UK podcast. I am Al. I am joined by Anton again. Hello, Anton.
Hello, Alistair. How are you doing? We've got good bit of news this week.
Very well. We do. We've got a lot of bits of news. We have no Mike again. Mike, I'm afraid, is still not able to join us. But the good news is we've got Mo again. Hi, Mo.
Hi.
You're doing
it's
well.
So you. You bring with you enthusiasm and warmth, which, let's face it, Mike's wonderful, and he's very warm and very enthusiastic, but sometimes it takes him a while to warm up. You start recording an episode, and Mike's like, hi, we're here again, and then he gets into the swing of things when he's all happy and excited, but it takes him a moment, whereas you've just come out of the gates, happy and cheery.
I'm glad I can bring some enthusiasm.
Excellent. How's everybody's week been? What have you been playing? Anton, what have you played this week?
Oh, I played a title by the name of Mighty Goose. You play as a goose with a peripheral, very big guns, many of them larger than yourself. It's kind of 2D pixel art. It's very much like a more desensical version of Metal Slug. So if you took Metal Slug and then combined it with the comedic elements of very basically Untitled Goose Game, you would maybe have Mighty Goose. It's fairly simple. It has a co-op mode, but you're very much just a companion character if you are doing it co-op. But it's a charming enough title. I think if you could get on sale, maybe worth a go. But to be honest, I would probably just pick up Metal Slug if the opportunity came around, because you can get those fairly cheap. And that's been the
I'm
big
intrigued.
One.
I'm intrigued. What made you play that one? Because I remember when that came out a couple of months ago, it wasn't particularly well reviewed. It was kind of middle of the road. Everyone was like, meh, potential. But
yeah.
Why did you decide to give
Truthfully,
this one a go?
It was on Game Pass, and I accidentally pressed on it, and it booted up, and I was like, sure, why not? And it kind of just chucks you in at the deep end, so I was like, okay. So that's how I ended up with that one. Have you made some more, let's say, tactical choices in your gaming this week, Mo?
I've just stuck to Animal Crossing again this week.
That's
pretty much all I've done.
What sort of stuff have you been up to? Because I won't lie, I've been holding off. Like, I've been getting that craving because of the excitement for the Happy Home Paradise. It's like building in 2.0. So I've been holding off jumping in. What's been bringing you back week after week?
I just really want to... I kind of just ditched my island, so... It wasn't too bad, but it wasn't how I wanted it, and I never actually completed it. So when I went back onto it, I thought, right, I'm just going to take everything away and move the buildings and stuff like that around. And if you play it, you know that it takes a long time to move the buildings, the villagers' homes and the shops. You have to pay, is it like 50,000 bells per building? And then when you decide where you want it, you have to wait till the next day, and it's so tedious. But I'm finally getting into the swing of it, and I'm just making a go of something each day, so that by the time it comes up to the DLC and that, I'm ready and waiting.
Man, I hadn't thought of it like that, because I won't lie, there's a couple of things in my head where I'm like, especially now that we've got the increased inclines and stairs, bridges, I'm like... There's a lot that I need to get done on that island and can do, so maybe I should jump in before I get all the new tools, and then that's just my life for a little bit. How about yourself, Alistair? Have you been doing more than designing islands or killing things as a goose?
I mean, to be fair, when you guys were talking about Animal Crossing, all I really heard there was blah, 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 50,000 bells, blah, 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 blah.
You did hear bells, which that's good. That is an Animal Crossing right there.
Well, I heard a big number, and I was like, ooh, that sounds interesting. And then there was bells, and I was very confused. What have I been playing? I have done, well, as expected, I've done more Mario Golf, and I may have cheated.
Traitor!
I may have heinously gone and bought an Xbox Series S.
Which, that is three of us on the podcast now, so we're not doing the best. So if you...
I was holding out. I was trying to be the last one of us to not get an Xbox. And to be fair, I was the last one of us to not get an Xbox, but I did cave and win and got one.
But yeah, I think on that note, if you're interested in getting Al's first impressions on the Xbox Series S, I believe it was you got?
was, yeah.
Yeah, do go to nsukp.co.uk/support-us because we'll be discussing it on Last Call, our bonus podcast that we do right after the show. And there will be tons of deets in there. We also do Roundup, the prequel expansion chat, and we have a wonderful Discord community where we met Mo. So, you know, it's a wonderful place of wonderful faces.
That is a really good way of putting it. That's an excellent way of putting it. We also have, of course, your wonderful webpage, nsukp.co.uk, and I do believe there's a YouTube page from which my face keeps appearing.
Indeed, tons of reviews going up there very regularly. Some of some titles that you may have missed, such as Graveyard Keeper, some of some new titles, such as Space Sartopia, which you recently reviewed, Al, and everything in between. So do give that a gander. Just search Nintendo Switch UK Podcast on YouTube.
Indeed. Actually, while we're plugging stuff, we love reviews. So if you care to go onto iTunes and leave us a review, that would be excellent. We do have a review that we do want to talk about, but Mike has forbidden us from talking about our latest review until he gets back because he is desperate to talk about it himself.
All I can say is you've gotten an upgrade, not from just being a resident cynic, but to a historic whiner. But that's for next week.
Yeah, I know. I talk about it. Mike will get really upset if we do. He's so excited. I've not seen him this excited in a long time because he basically gets to make fun of me. It's normally the other way around.
It's beautiful.
Anyway, I think without further ado, we should probably jump into this week's news.
Tell us the people want to know.
So, NIS, or NIS, depending what you want to call them, of America, announced Crystar for Nintendo Switch. Basically, you battle through Purgatory as Rey to help save her sister in this action RPG coming out in spring 2022, if I can get the words out. Anton, you want to tell me about this one?
Yeah, this was a title that initially I was a bit just like, another one, because to be honest, NIS, or NIS as you put so eloquently, they put out a lot of content. Some of it's hits, some of it's misses, but overall, I was kind of taken by this one. I think they have worked around the maybe limitations of their budget and art style, worked around the limitation of their budget and created an art style that really looks quite good. It's very anime and very Japanese, but it looks fairly well done, and I think they've, with simplistic world design, created a fairly interesting looking Purgatory. And I'm curious to see what the gameplay and the nuances of the gameplay entail in terms of its action elements. As I imagine, as the RPG elements being NIS's kind of home turf, they should hopefully hit out of the park more.
Yeah, I had a look at the video for it, and it's not the kind of thing I would normally really be interested in, but I was quite taken by it as well. And when I read a little bit more into it, I quite liked the idea of the story as well. So it might actually be something I look into, depending on how much it costs. But yeah, looks pretty good.
Yeah, it's got a novel battle mechanic, this one. It's the only game that I've ever come across where you get stronger by crying. Which is a weird one. The whole story is all very emo. It's all about emotions and, you know, gathering strength from your tears. And the more you cry in the game, the stronger you get. And it's got some really weird and interesting stuff going on. Plus, this one used to be a PlayStation exclusive. It was on PS4. Ah. And then I think it came to Steam, where it's got mixed but generally positive reviews. And the Switch is the first non-Sony console that it's coming to. In other words, it's not been on Xbox, which is nice.
Lovely stuff.
So there you go. Yeah. All right, moving on. I like racing games. I don't know where you guys generally stand on them, but Motorsports Games have announced that NASCAR Heat Ultimate Edition Plus for Nintendo Switch is coming out on the 19th of November. Where do you guys stand on NASCAR, Mo?
Racing games, it's not really my thing all the time. Not that I never play them. I did have a look at this one, and it looks quite nice, the art style and stuff, but I did look at the price, and I wouldn't pay $35.99 for it, but that's maybe because it's not really my thing as such. So
yeah, this is a hard game to quantify or to look as an outsider into. I think what they've done here is they've taken a very simple mechanic of driving around the circle, and they've done it very, very well. I think the character customization of the main protagonist, or who you play as, is very in-depth for, to be honest, you're not really going to see them. that often, but they've really put a lot of effort into it. 39 tracks. Admittedly, they're all circles, but overall, they've put a lot of effort and care into this one. I'm sure if you're like a super NASCAR fan, you'll be like, wow, this is the best circle. And for that, God bless, you're going to have a whale of time. For me, it's £35. Maybe on a sale, because it does look like they've done it well round, and I could pay like a couple pounds, maybe a pound, no, a couple pounds for a circle game.
I mean, to be fair, it is so easy to knock this. I mean, I just want to go put like a Stetson on and just make every sort of redneck joke I can possibly think of. But at the end of the day, NASCAR is a very popular sport around the world, and I get the fact it is a very nuanced racing series. I mean, there's a lot of very, very talented drivers do drive in NASCAR, and it is quite a challenge. I mean, I kind of look at this and think, I could recreate Talladega Nights, or I could even try and recreate Cars. Wow, it would be cool. There's a lot of good stuff, and this game does seem to be packed with physics and AI and all the kind of stuff to make this a really, really genuine contender for a racing sim. If you like NASCAR, you probably will like this, and it's kind of cool they squeezed in both the 2020 and the 2021 seasons of Cars and Drivers into this as well. So it's not just sort of a 1 year thing. This is 2 years worth of game that they've basically compressed into one, which is kind of cool. So if you're into NASCAR, maybe £35 for this game is actually a bit of a bargain. If for the rest of us, it's probably not going to be pressing our throttle pedals anytime soon. I don't know, that seems like a really rubbish way of putting it, but I'm going to leave it there and move on instead to talk about Nakana.io announcing Stills Land for Nintendo Switch coming out 5th of November. This one looks interesting. It's a graphic novel, and it really takes hand-drawn to a whole other level, Anton.
Indeed. This one, it kind of took me aback. Similarly, this was one that I wasn't thinking the most of when I was clicked on it and was going to check out the content. You know, and the art style is simple. Like, but it's been done with such precision and kind of care that I'm like, oh, interesting. It seems to be a little bit of, you've kind of got this kind of mysterious figure that seems to be the manifestation of your protagonist's anxieties and traumas. However, it's in a very grounded and realistic manner. I don't know, I just look at this game and I think there's going to be a lot of nuance in its storytelling. And I'm not too sure of the details of its storytelling and its story, but it just seems like it's been done very meticulously, even despite its somewhat simplistic art style. This one's interesting, and I believe it's $2.99. It's going to be cheap, and it's coming out on the 5th of November. How are you feeling about this one, Mo?
I was pretty much the same. When looking at it, I was like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to think of this, but I watched the wee video they had of it. And you're right, it is really basic, the art style and that, but it kind of drew me in, because it was like, it was touching on sort of mental health side of things, and like you say, with the figure that was there. And because of the price as well, it might well be something I look at getting, because I was quite kind of taken back by that one. I wasn't expecting it to be what I watched.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, it's been making waves sort of everywhere it goes. It was it won sort of I forgot what the award was, but at the AMAs, Art House Games and Film Festival or Creative Media Festival, something along those lines, it won. What did it win? Most Amazing Game. There you go. And at the beginning of the trailer, it's got honourable mentions and nominees for awards left, right, and centre. It's got various things that it's been given, various accolades. It's deep. Apparently, it takes you aback a bit. The story is really, really well told. It's, as Anton said, it's a story about depression and anxiety. Basically, about a student who has just basically finished their studies and is, I think, supposed to be about to make their way into the world, and the fears and anxieties that come with that, which I guess a lot of people out there can probably relate to. We all went to school or college or university or whatever, and then had to go step outside of that nice bubble, and this game apparently does it really, really well. So something interesting to look forward to, and at that price, well, probably worth picking up, to be honest.
Indeed,
in my opinion,
it has the thing that took me aback is, one, as you say, the relatability of the story here, but it's seemingly portrayed in a manner of intimacy that I think a game that's not made by like a one-man band can achieve, which is really exciting to see.
Indeed. All right, well, let's move on to talk about a game which sort of sounds like it sums up me, to be honest. Feed Interactive announced Negative Nancy for the Nintendo Switch, which is out now.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomised genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM. Then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favourite podcast platforms now.
How are you feeling about this one, Mo? This was a tough one in my book.
I watched the video for that one as well, and it was the voice at the start was really loud, so I got a bit of a scare. but as it went on, I was really enjoying it, and sometimes in life you want to say no to people, and I feel like this game might just do that for me. I did see that it's currently on offer at £9.68 instead of £11.39 as well. I can't remember when that offer finishes, but I did notice that. And
23rd of October, apparently.
Oh, okay. Oh, 23rd.
Which was 2 days ago.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. That's strange. It does say in the video that the story changes when you say no or when you don't say no, so I'm guessing there could be alternative routes in the game, so you could maybe play it a couple of times to get different scenarios.
That's a good thought.
That's what I took from it, but I'm not sure.
Well, that would make sense, because it is described by the publisher as a choose-your-own-adventure game where you can only say no.
Yeah.
But maybe you also have the choice to not say no. I don't really know. What amused me from the trailer was the number of different inflections they could get to say the word no.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. They kind of choose-your-no-adventure, as I think they coined it. But I'm not too sure about this one. I have a fear that it might overstay its welcome or outwear its gimmick. I don't know. Like, I think they're kind of playing on the kind of humor of, you know, somebody's like, oh, do you mind if I sit down on this bench next to you? And you're like, no. Saying it when you shouldn't or when you traditionally not. But I'm not too sure how long that gimmick will be appealing, 'cause I think maybe if we didn't have, I believe it wasn't going under, but there was another indie game about being an intern where it was all about saying no. And I feel like I've seen this, I don't know, it's not quite clicking for me, but I'll give it a wee look at the reviews, because I won't lie, the trailer, whoever's edited it, has done a great job, and as you say, it's great to see the inflections of no.
Definitely a bizarre concept, and it could be really funny. It's probably not going to be one I think any of us will pay full price for, but if you can pick it up for £1 or £1.50 in the future, then you might think it's quite good fun just for a laugh. Who knows? Okay, up next. Weirdly, this one is exciting me. I don't quite know why. I feel like I shouldn't do, but Ubisoft have announced Monopoly Madness for the Nintendo Switch coming out the 9th of December. I mean, I'll let you guys talk about this first. Mo, what was your take on this?
Well, when I went to look at it, I was kind of like, okay, it'll just be Monopoly. Monopoly's Monopoly. But I actually got excited for it as well. So I thought it'd probably be a really good co-op. The only thing is, in the video, I thought it looked really, really busy. So I don't know if that's just for the advert purposes or if the game will be as busy as that, because there was a lot going on.
Yeah, this one's based on the premise that Mr. Monopoly Man has went away on holiday, and due to that the rules of Monopoly have been torn down and broken apart, which will in concept enable more gameplay, video game like gameplay. It is kind of ironic that a Monopoly game Ubisoft has managed to sell it twice at full price and part of a collection. There's a beautiful capitalist idea there in itself. But yeah, this one, I don't understand the gameplay, but it looks kind of bombastic and out there and ridiculous and party friendly. I'm just hoping it doesn't take 4 hours to play. I think this will be a much more quick fire round. I'm also curious to see if it works better as a sit on the couch cell game or if it's open to some co-op online madness. I don't really understand it. It's Monopoly with a twist. You don't have to go round the board. You can just zoom everywhere and you've got a bulldozer. It's intriguing.
Very, very strange. So from what I've gathered reading the press releases, there's 6 players at any time, which means I guess you might have some online play. And couch co-op sounds like it'd be far more fun, but you'd need a lot of Joy-Cons to do that and a lot of screen estate. But who knows? I think it'd be really good fun as a party game. And yeah, as you say, they just ripped up the rules of Monopoly and it's just all a free-for-all run around, try and collect as much money as you can in as fast a space of time as possible, build as many buildings as you can, but then you go and pick up the odd chance box where you get either chucked in jail or you're given a bulldozer to go knock down your opponent's buildings to slow down their progress. And it just looks frantic and hilarious and fun, and I really want to play this. You mean Ubisoft are turning to the kings of making unexpectedly good looking games. It kind of, in my opinion, started with Mario Rabbids and has just gone from strength to strength. They're a powerhouse of a development company, or a development house if you ask me. I think the stuff they come up with is great.
Yeah, they're an interesting publisher where they're single-handedly, they're doing the games as a service, big AAA stuff with The Division and For Honor on the 2 other consoles. They've got stuff that's killing it on mobile, like Asphalt through their subsidiary Gameloft. They're doing Switch exclusives like Mario Rabbids, and then they're doing kind of more shovelware-esque stuff. And then they have smaller indie stuff that goes through the kind of wire as well, like your Childs of Light and Valiant Hearts. They're an interesting publisher that seems to be going at everything at all times. So curious to see what the reviews are like on this, as for both Monopoly fans and new people to the franchise.
Indeed, and don't forget Mythic Quest to tie up with Apple TV to do a genius TV show.
Brilliant show.
Anyway, let's move on and talk about, well, I'm guessing that Mo is going to want to talk about this one quite a lot. So Concerned Ape, the developer that we love, who created Stardew Valley, has announced his next game, because he's a one-man band, and it's called Haunted Chocolatier. Mo, talk.
I'm so excited about this one. I stumbled upon this. I wasn't looking for anything. I just came across it this week. And noticed the art style on the page, and I was like, oh no, there's a new one. But I don't think it's going to be out anytime soon, going by the article that I read. It's the same art style as Stardew Valley, and it's got the same sort of, there's like still a kind of combat thing going on, and it looks like you can make your own chocolate, and I think you own like a chocolate shop and sell the chocolate as well and get to know all the villagers and stuff. But I don't think it's just going to be as straightforward as that. I think there's going to be a lot of sort of underlying things and sort of mysteries to find out, quite similar to what Stardew Valley had with all the little side bits you could do and find and gather. So yeah, I'm really, really excited for this one. I don't think it's going to be out anytime soon. But the other thing I thought was really cool, it mentioned on the article that Stardew Valley focuses on the sun, whereas this game focuses more on the moon. So I don't know if maybe nighttime's going to have quite a lot to do with it. But I thought that was really, I just really liked that. That was a really cool kind of take on it. So yeah, I'm super excited.
I'm totally with you, Mo. I think there's a lot to take in here. One, I love that they've kind of taken the Deltarune approach of doing an indie sequel, which is not to just go and throw everything out of the kitchen sink when making a sequel or spiritual successor or a new title, but kind of iterating on the incredible work that they've done before with Stardew. I'm one as well shocked to see this title exist, because to be honest, Concerned Ape has been killing it with the updates for Stardew. Like, I don't know where they found the time, because those updates have been huge, and then this game is here and it looks polished, and to be honest, if they said it was coming out next week, I would have bought it or believed them. And I'm excited to see the kind of more paranormal elements of having the ghosts help you, and I think the world, the art style, it looks a little, at least in how the trailer was structured, looks a little bit more story driven, which I think personally for myself, I wouldn't be, you know, I'd be excited, but I'm not looking for another just throw your entire life into it. Although I'm surely aware that I possibly could, and just building the ultimate chocolate store slash factory slash whatever chocolatiering adventure there is. But having a little story to kind of guide me through it would be quite nice. And I love the cute little wee pixel Golsow.
They are adorable, yeah. Eric Barone, who is Concerned Ape, the stuff that he was talking about this game, it's all very... Well, let's just say it is very early days. I mean, he doesn't know what the game is yet. He's saying he develops the game in sort of little bits and chucks it in, so he's got an idea of roughly what the core mechanic type thing is, but the game's running on an entirely new engine, so he's basically built from the ground up, even though it looks very, very similar to Stardew. He's used, I think, apparently some of the code, but he doesn't know what the game's going to be, and he doesn't want to say what he thinks it might be, because he doesn't want to hem himself into sort of into a corner, into a box. He wants to leave it entirely open. So although he's got this teeny tiny little demo or video, I should say, showing a little bit of it, he doesn't know what the rest of the game is going to be. So we can make all the speculation we want. He might go down any random tangent and turn the game into a completely different thing to what the video suggests it currently is. And I like that. I like the fact that it's very fluid. He's not got a fixed idea. He's just going the flow and seeing where it takes him. And I suspect might take on some feedback or ideas that the community out there might come up with, having heard his little sort of teaser about it, which is kind of awesome, I have to say. Definitely one to be very excited about. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about Game & Watch. The Legend of Zelda. It's got a new advert for the Game & Watch Legend of Zelda. Sure. Okay, Anton.
Yeah.
Is this exciting?
Yeah, this was one that made the rounds. I think this was, you know, to be honest, one, a very snazzy, slightly too edgy trailer, I thought, for just another Game & Watch. Cool trailer nonetheless, doesn't really reveal anything new. This has been floating around as I think maybe during the direct in which it was unveiled, it maybe fell through the cracks for a few people. But now more people have seen it. It's happening. I don't think either of us are really buying it. Mo, are you? I doubt it.
I actually did go to pre-order it, but I retracted it because I was like, I don't really need it. It does look really good. It looks nice, but I think if I was to have it, it would just sit there, and I would feel bad. I would rather they went to people that were actually going to use them, you know. But yeah, I watched the advert for it as well, and I don't actually know if I seen the advert, if there was one beforehand. I can't remember seeing anything, so it was cool. But yeah, I think a lot of people will enjoy it when they get their hands on it.
Yeah, there's still plenty of pre-orders kicking around. The cynical out there might suggest that maybe this advert was released because there are plenty of pre-orders kicking around. It's not selling quite as well as perhaps its predecessor, the Super Mario one, did. Maybe the novelty wore off. Maybe people bought Super Mario 1 and remembered the whole point of Game Watch being that you buy it, you play it for 3 minutes, you forget about it, you leave it behind the couch, you find it, you go, oh, that's interesting, you forget about it for another year, and actually it's probably not worth buying one.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I think as well as that, the Mario titles that were in the original, or not the original, the last of the new Game & Watch cheese, is very pick up and play. You can't really pick up Zelda 1. To be honest, even if you sat down with a guide, most people probably don't get very far in Zelda 1. And Zelda 2, for that matter, is not much easier. Maybe Link's Awakening, I could see people getting a little bit further, but we have that on the Nintendo Switch.
Very nice version we have on the Nintendo Switch.
So, to be honest, I think although people love Zelda, I don't think many people have much nostalgia for the first two Zeldas, which is a bit harsh to say. I think there are some, but not as much as Mario, because I think a lot of people, you know, past its prime, have went back and found appreciation for Mario in the way that the original Zeldas are a little bit too alienating for some newer gamers. By newer, I mean anybody who wasn't, you know, a kid in 87, 86.
Basically anyone who isn't me or Mike or older.
Exactly.
Well, I'll tell you what a lot of people do have nostalgia for, and that is Grand Theft Auto 3. And we've got more news on... I'm going to have to say this with all of this again. Okay, the Grand Theft Auto, the trilogy, the definitive edition. Yep, okay, we've got a new trailer of gameplay, and by God, it looks good. I have to admit, I got far too excited watching this trailer. We talked about this in the last show, that I had an expectation of, yeah, they'll just sort of upscale it and it'll look exactly the same as it did before. No, apparently I was wrong. The across-the-board enhancements, including the new lighting and environmental upgrades, high-resolution textures, increased draw distances, are significantly better than I thought they were going to be, and they have basically transformed the games into not quite looking like new games, because they're not up at that level. They don't look like sort of GTA 5, but they look so much better. There's so much more detail, even just in the faces and lighting and environments. And okay, Cal, calm down. 11th of November, we've got a release date. It's coming out, $49.99. There'll be a physical on the 7th of December, which in itself causes me a problem, because I don't know whether to buy it on the release day digital or wait for the physical. I might actually pre-order a release day eShop version for the first time ever. I'm too excited about this. I'm going to stop talking. Anton, please say something.
I'm completely with you. I was very excited for it. Was already on board day one. But wow, they've really done a great job here. The textures on it almost look uncanny because they look so crisp and clean and just overkill for what they needed to deliver here. But I love to see it. The lighting really transforms this game into being what I remember when I played it as a kid, when I shouldn't have played it as a kid. So excited. I'm waiting for the digital version, the physical version, and so I'm going to start by playing San Andreas on Game Pass, and then when it comes out on Switch, I'm going to go backwards and play Vice City and then Free. But wow, they have really went above and beyond with this collection, with GTA 5 style controls and targeting, making these games more accessible than they were in their original adaptations. And just, wow, the lighting, the rain, and God, just very impressed. Mo, how are you feeling about it?
Yeah, I watched the video for that as well, and I was quite impressed with how they've done it, because like you say, it's not quite up to what the most recent GTA is, but it's good enough to go back to. When you jump onto an old game, you remember it slightly different, and old games sort of feel more, I guess, maybe what newer games feel like now. So when you do jump back, it's kind of like, oh, I forgot the graphics were like this. So they've tweaked it, but not so much that it's really modernized it, which I really liked. And the colors are just, they're so vibrant, and it just looks perfect. If I was to get it, I would probably go for physical rather than digital. Definitely.
Mo, back up. If you were to get it, Mo, come on, you're going to get on the GTA train here.
I know. Well,
there's no if about it.
San Andreas was the one I played the most of, and if that's going to be on Game Pass, I'll maybe just tinker with it there for now. Like what Anton's saying he's going to do before the release, that one is available. So I'll maybe do that first and then see.
Well, I need Mike here. I know Mike has already shared in Discord. He has already pre-ordered it on his fancy OLED Switch, and I bet it's going to look so good in the OLED. Oh, I'm just... Basically, right now, what I need to do is show everybody that meme of Futurama going, just shut up and take my money. That's basically what my brain is saying right now. Shut up and take my money. Okay, Al, breathe. Compose yourself. Woosah. And moving on. After 33 months at the top of After 33 months at the top, the Nintendo Switch was not the US's best-selling console, being overtaken by the PlayStation 5. Well, bums to them. Anton.
Yeah, so... Admittedly, this is surprising timing. I would have thought this would have happened closer to the PS5's launch or closer to a big title getting released, and especially the fact it happened near the OLED... it's a bit surprising. So I think the competition's heating up a little for the Nintendo Switch, because to be honest, with Metroid Dread, the Switch OLED, this wouldn't have been the time when I expected this to happen, but it's bound to happen eventually, and you know, as soon as the holiday season happens, I'm sure the Switch will pick up again.
So, detail question for you then. What month do these numbers relate to? Do they apply to sort of the current month when the OLED came out, or the month before the OLED came out, in which case everyone might have been holding out for an OLED?
That's a question I don't have the answer for, because that's a very possible fan theory. What do you think, Mo?
I was quite surprised as well, but given how the PlayStation 5 seems to be in quite high demand, but I wasn't sure if it was due to the components rather than, you know, would there been a shortage of the components rather than I've lost my train of thought. Sorry.
Well, that's fine. I've looked this up. I was right. It's September. So September, the Switch outsold the PlayStation, and the OLED came out in October, which explains exactly why. So yeah. A combination of everybody waiting for the OLED, coupled with probably a nice surge in supply of PlayStation 5, because let's face it, it's still sold out everywhere, so their sales are basically being bottlenecked and throttled because of the fact that there's just not enough of them. I think those two things combined have led to this atrocity of the PS5 outselling the amazing Nintendo Switch, which everybody should be buying out there instead of PlayStation 5.
Yeah, it would be very interesting to see these numbers in a world where Sony isn't selling every single PlayStation 5 they have. Like, if they didn't have a ceiling, how competitive it would be. Because we don't really have a fair example. Similarly, on the Microsoft side, selling every single one by console they seemingly have, also the Series X, at least, not the Series S. They seemingly have way too many of those. Anyway.
Well, one fewer after this weekend since I went and bought one. Anyway, alright, let's talk about Dying Light Platinum Edition, because if you want to go and buy it in the eStore at the moment, you can't. Why is that, Anton?
Yeah, so, they have went ahead and, you know, the game's been released. However, the title was banned in Germany. Now, this is relatively common. Germany, compared to most of Europe, has some of the strictest both copyright and just age rating stuff generally. But the kind of where this gets a little bit tricky is not only is it being banned in Germany, because Nintendo of Europe is based in Germany, it means it's been banned across the entirety of Europe and some of Oceania's, aka Australia and New Zealand. You can still get physical copies of this in non-Germany, but it's an interesting bottleneck in Nintendo's release schedule, which I'm surprised this hasn't happened earlier, Mo.
Yeah, so you can't get it digitally, but you can get it physically. And is this to do... I'd read a bit saying that it hadn't been rated. So does that mean that it's just a digital version that's not been rated?
Yeah, so it has been rated for every other region.
Okay.
So every region, it's okay, it's like thumbs up, you can buy this game in the UK, but due to Nintendo Europe being based in Germany, it can't be put on the eStore, the European eStore, which then stops it from getting distributed to everyone else, which, yeah, it's weird. I feel like that shouldn't be how the system works, but apparently so.
Yeah.
Well, apparently they are working on it. They're trying to speak to people, because I mean, there's a lot of games that historically would never have got published in Germany that in recent years have. I mean, even Wolfenstein, which, let's face it, had Nazis in it, that would have been instant no for Germany. It's now published there. You can get these things out. It's just that for whatever reason, this one's been sort of caught up in bureaucracy. They changed the laws back in, I forget when it was. Can I find the year? No, they changed the laws at some point. I'm going to say 2016, 2017. Some point around there, they changed their laws. But because Dying Light came out before that, it was caught up in the older regulations rather than newer ones, in which case it would have slipped through nice and easily. Very, very complicated. Basically, it's boiling down to bureaucracy and the fact that Nintendo decided to headquarter themselves in Germany. Maybe we should suggest them they should come and headquarter themselves here in the UK. Then we could have Nintendo UK and that would be awesome.
They could just have one in every country.
We could go knock on their doors and go, hello, we're the Nintendo Switch UK podcast. Will you give us stuff?
Yeah, there's only so many times we can bike chain ourselves to the lamppost outside their business until they notice us, eh?
Bike chaining, that's smart. I was going to go super glue and that's harder to get off.
Yeah, that's a little messy.
Speaking of things that are messy, the release schedule for Life is Strange True Colors has been a bit messy. It got delayed earlier in the year, but it now has a release date. It's coming out early December.
Yeah, this is one where, you know, I think they delayed the Cal 1 and 2 collection, still delayed till 2022. This one was kind of delayed to as soon as we could make it, and here we are. I think the fact that they have went to the effort of delaying it, I'm hoping we've got a solid port here.
I was really happy to see this. I've already played the game, but for people that are waiting for it to come on Switch, I think it's really good that they're managing to release it this year, and I think it will be positive in terms of any bugs or glitches or whatnot, because when it did first come out there was quite a few updates that went through it, So yeah, I think that's really positive, and I'm just really happy that folk are going to be able to buy it for the Switch.
Woohoo! Okay, let's move on to talk about one of our favourite people in the world, Sakurai. Well, we know that Smash development is pretty much finished. There's not really any more fighters coming. And he's been upset about the way the world has been interpreting his Twitter and turning to memes and all kinds of stuff. Well, now he's a bit more free and he's decided to start posting things on the tweeters. Mo, what's he been posting?
He's been posting this really cute fluffy cat with little, you can see its little toe beans in the corner, and there's a little, I think it's a devil among us. Yeah, it looks like a devil. It's got like little red horns, but the cat doesn't look overly impressed. I think maybe he's disrupted his sleep. I think that's what's happened there.
Which is kind of nice, because basically what Sakurai's came out and said is, you know, he's now able to post freely on social media for the first time without people being like, not first time, but in a good while, without people being like, oh, is this the new fighter? Which I guess is confirmation we're not getting Among Us in Smash Bros. Anytime soon, unless we get that Fighter Pass Volume 3. We can always dream.
I know, the internet will never let this go. The internet's never going to let Sakurai. He's never going to be allowed to post anything without some bit of the internet going, it's a sign! It's a sign! So yeah, watch out for Among Us coming to Smash at some point soon.
Maybe it's a trick. Maybe that is a little hint there. People,
oh my God,
aren't going to expect it.
Take a two-year gap and be like, we're back. The clues have been there all along. Check out my Twitter. You have to follow me now if you want to know who the new fighter is.
Oh, poor Sakurai. I don't feel sorry for him at all. He's a very happy, very wealthy man, and I'm sure he's probably, he could just go and post under a different Twitter account if he really wanted to, I guess. Why not? Yeah. Okay, well, that's lovely news. Let's talk about some stuff that's maybe not quite so lovely, actually, in the world of gaming, sadly. So Mercury Steam, who created Metroid Dread, have been in a bit of hot water this week, Anton.
Indeed. So they're the Spanish development studio that basically handled the entirety of Metroid Dread's development. The attention and spotlight first got brought onto them due to one of their 3D artists, Roberto Menchez, excuse me if that pronunciation's not great, which had worked on the title for 18 months and was not credited. When kind of raising attention to this, he was informed by his former employer, Mercury Steam, that basically if you've not worked on, I believe it was, 25% of the game's development time, you do not get any accreditation, which, you know, when you sign on to a project like that, you don't know how much longer it's going to take. You know, it might take another year, it might take 2 years. It might take 4 years in the case many people presume the development time for Metroid Dread was. Anyway, it's, people are basically throwing shade that Mercury Steam isn't crediting everybody who's worked on this title. Which, to be honest, dedicating 8 months of your life to a project isn't a small commitment, is it, Mo?
No, I've been hearing quite a bit about this sort of the past week as well. And I'm not really fully clued up on how it all works in terms of that, but when I was listening and reading up a bit about it and stuff, I think it's a real shame, because those people have put in a lot of hard work into this game, and you know, for future employment or whatnot, and if they state that they've made a game, they're not listed on it, you know. So it's, or that's what I'm thinking it would kind of go along the lines of, like I say, I don't know a whole lot about that side of things, but it's a real shame.
Well, the rabbit hole seems to go even deeper, because on the back of that, there was a whole load of, I can call it whistleblowing. I mean, none of this is verified. We have to be very careful kind of what we say here, because this is just repeating what disgruntled employees are saying, and there's every chance that it is entirely accurate. There's also every chance that it could be exaggerated or fabricated. Who knows? But there have been many comments from various sources, shall we say, that were along the lines of the pandemic was not well managed, it was utter chaos, there was or unsafe anti-COVID measures. They didn't trust their workforce. The workforce didn't feel valued, and it was just a terrible kind of toxic atmosphere. Effectively, was being created at Mercury Steam, and there are many different people saying kind of the same messages, which, you know, no smoke without fire, and it's a shame. And actually, you do kind of wonder, will Nintendo react in any way? That's not the way Nintendo works. Nintendo won't say a thing about this. It'd be interesting to see what the future of the company holds, because if you're being badmouthed that publicly, I suspect people won't want to work for you.
Yeah, it's a peculiar situation. Historically, the kind of companies that Nintendo has worked closely with, such as the team that made Luigi's Mansion, or Retro Studio, or HAL, HAL Laboratory, they've always had kind of a very similar ethos to Nintendo, and we've heard great things about how Nintendo treats their employees, with just record kind of employment tenant kind of terms of just how long people stay, and how they treat people during the Animal Crossing New Horizons development, of just prioritizing the welfare and health of their staff rather than the kind of deadline of getting a game out. So it's very peculiar to see this with somebody who's worked so closely with Nintendo. It's a bit troubling. You know, I feel like there is some stuff in there that is, you know, could be a degree of hyperbole, but stuff like not being allowed to work from home, that's something that was what happened or it didn't. So there's either lies or that was how they chose to conduct their business, which we haven't had anybody jump out and be like, actually, no, I've worked at Mercury Steam for 25 years and it's been brilliant. It's been very quiet in terms of defenses for our, you know, the company. So, well, I guess we'll never know, but it's a bit troubling to hear these concerns, eh?
Yeah, I mean, the games industry, certainly it was notorious for a long time for not producing the greatest working conditions. I hadn't really heard so much about that in recent years. Maybe that's got drowned out by COVID, to be honest. But it just goes to show that is potentially still bubbling away under there. Anyway, let's get off that topic, because that's frankly bumming me out and it's not much fun. Shall we talk about rumours instead?
No, I'm not normally one for gossip, but...
Okay, well, we've only got one rumour really to talk about this week, but it's an interesting one. Hamster Corporation, the publisher behind Arcade Archives, that series of games, they filed a trademark for Console Archives. I wonder what that could be. Anton, have you got any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think they've basically ran out of arcade games and they're just going to start moving to console games, which I'm all for. You know, there is some things about arcade games that, you know, were designed around the modes and methods of that genre. And, you know, these games, there's still plenty of classic, rare, forgotten arcade console games that, you know, we still don't have limited access. I think if they could get some maybe rough cut gems from, you know, maybe stuff like the PC Engine, or just even some rare NES or Master System stuff, I would be happy for it. It would be tough for them, because they're going to be competing a little with the NES, SNES, and Mega Drive / Genesis Online.
Well, I'm intrigued. I mean, you're going sort of NES, SNES, Mega Drive era, whereas I'm kind of wondering if it was something different. I thought perhaps they might be looking at something along the lines of, you know, the random ones from history, the Magnavox, or even sort of the Spectrums and that kind of era. That's kind of why I thought they might go, rather than some of the more mainstream ones, Anton.
Very possibly, to be honest. I'm hoping for some PC Engine. That's what I'm hoping for, but I guess only time will tell. Shuffling on to the rumour there that you mentioned, Mo, Warner Bros. Has basically, through a methodology of leaks, is working on a Super Smash Bros. Clone. The clone is expected to feature Scooby-Doo or Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, Gandalf, Tom and Jerry, Batman, Fred Flintstone, Mad Max, and Johnny Bravo. This was found via a NetherRealm leak, but they were referring to this as something else that was happening at Warner Bros. Games and not something they were involved with. Naturally, being a fighting game, they were made aware of it, presumably. This is an interesting one. What's your thoughts on this one, Mo?
I think I'm sure there's games like this that's been put out there before. I'm trying to think. Was there not a Cartoon Network one at some point? I don't know if it was on Switch, but I seem to remember something like that. With the same sort of kind of fighting style, just obviously with different characters and that. So, I mean, that kind of style of game isn't really my thing, but it would maybe be cool to see that.
Yeah, I think you might be right. I feel there might have been sort of a Nickelodeon one as well. There's a really interesting mix of characters in there, though. I mean, fighting Shaggy as Gandalf would be random. Fighting Batman as Fred Flintstone would be random. I mean, there could be an awful lot of fun just in the juxtaposition of the characters alone in this game. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing when this comes out, just to see how dumb and stupid it looks and how much fun you could have with your mates on a Friday night playing this game. Even if it's a rubbish game, it could still just be a barrel of laughs. I hope it's real. I hope it's a real rumour, and I hope we get to see it soon.
Yeah, it was... The person I saw re-sharing it on and kind of pointing attention towards was Jeff Grubbs, which has been a fairly well-trusted leaker in the past, at least from my experience of looking into the stuff that he has leaked. Yeah, this seems like a very logical thing as well. I saw the new Space Jam, A New Legacy, and that was a film oozing an intertext contextuality, going to, I believe they went to like Matrix Land, Harry Potter Land, DC Land. They had It in there, and the Iron Giant. So clearly, there's Warner Bros. Are interested in just exploiting their IP and just the breadth of it in new ways. Which, considering they're going up against Disney, you know, embracing the wealth of IP you have might be a new wise way to handle things.
Yabba dabba doo! Bring this out quickly. Okay, let's move on to the quiz.
I have so many questions.
I'm quite chuffed with that one. That last link, that amused me. Okay, let's do the quiz. So, we are currently at Anton 23, Mike 24.5, Mo is on 0, but I'm going to do the same thing I did last week, and if Mo wins, Mo gets 20 points. If Anton wins, he gets 1 point. Just for the record, Mo does not always get 20 points. Just to catch you up. So,
thank you.
For anyone who listened last week, we had a Mario quiz just because I was feeling like doing something a bit different. And so I decided to kind of carry on down that same theme this week. So this week, any guesses what the quiz theme might be?
Legend of Zelda?
No, I'm going Sonic.
Alright.
So Anton's going, yes, I know this stuff. Yeah. Mo, how good your Sonic knowledge?
Well, I mean, I played it when I was little on Sega. I played 1 and 2, and then Sonic and Knuckles, and was there a 3? I think
I think there's been 4, 5, yeah. 6, 7, 8. There's so been tons of them.
I've definitely played sort of early day ones, so we'll see.
Alright, okay. Well, to be fair, I imagine given these questions, none of that will prepare you for the quiz whatsoever.
Great.
Oh no.
Let's just jump straight in with the first question. It's going to be buzzers again, so and you've got some creative buzzers for this. Anton, I want you to go whee if you know the answer.
Certainly.
Mo, I want you to go boing.
Right, okay.
You got the answer.
These got are it. A lot better.
So,
than
Anton, give
week.
Me a whee.
Whee.
Mo, give me a boing.
Boing.
Excellent. All right. You're
your
good
boing
to go.
So much better than my Wii.
Okay, question one. Sonic wasn't always a hedgehog. What was he originally penned to be?
Wee. A needle mouse.
Incorrect.
Ah.
Mo, would you care to steal the point?
A needle mouse. I feel like I should know this one. An anteater.
No, originally he was supposed to be a rabbit.
Oh.
He was going to be a rabbit, and he was going to attack people with his ears, but apparently that was too technically difficult to do at the time, so then he became an armadillo, which is where the rolling thing came in, and then laterally he became a hedgehog, but they were worried that Americans wouldn't know what a hedgehog was. So there you go. No points. To the first question. Second question then. This might be leaning towards Anton, but I don't know. Sonic wasn't always called Sonic. What was his original name after they settled on him being a hedgehog?
we
was, where's more gusto, man?
Was he Needle Mouse?
You need to elaborate a little bit.
Sonic the Needle Mouse?
Mo, care to try and steal the point?
Sonic the Porcupine.
No, his name was going to be Mr. Needle Mouse. And indeed, actually, the working title for Sonic 4 was Project Needle Mouse.
I like that.
There you go. Okay, so we're 2 questions down. No points. This is exciting stuff. All right, question 3. Different parts of Sonic's design were inspired by real-world celebs. Sort of. Okay, let's call them pop culture icons. That's maybe a better way of putting it. Can you tell me who is the inspiration for his? We've got 3 body parts and then an extra bit. So there's basically 4 points up for grabs here. The first point. What was the inspiration for his head? Pop culture icon.
Try to think.
Possibly
are
before
you,
either of your time, to be honest.
Are you? You're older than myself, aren't you, Mo?
I think so.
Okay. Dear, the 90s, the dark age.
yeah.
When
any guesses?
Cars were invented. Obama. No, he.
I can safely say Sonic the Hedgehog's head was not modelled on Obama. Mo, do you want to say any random character person?
I have no idea.
Incorrect. It was Felix the Cat. Do either of you know who Felix the Cat is?
I've heard of that. Wait, is that the Felix from the cat food advert? Or is this the other black and white Felix?
Yeah, I was thinking of the cat food. Felix.
The cartoon... seen it. Okay.
I used to watch it as a kid. I knew exactly who he was talking about. Okay, so no points for head. What was it, or who, what, who, was the inspiration for the body? The shape of Sonic's body. Mind you of anyone?
Oh,
yeah, Anton?
Mickey Mouse?
Ding, 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 ding! We have our first point! He is indeed. His body was modelled on Mickey Mouse. All right, I will be very impressed if either of you get this, because frankly, I do not see the likeness here. But what was the inspiration for his boots? Do go on.
Oh, dear Lord, I forgot it. Elton John.
No, but interesting. You're not a million miles off in sort of the direction you've headed there. Mode, care to take a random stab?
Must be a singer of some sort. Freddie Mercury.
No, it's not. Weirdly, it is Michael Jackson's boots, specifically from the album cover for Bad. And if you go look at the boots from the album cover Bad, they don't look anything like Sonic's trainers, except for the fact they're a bit pointy. Anyway, okay, so the last one in this round, what was the inspiration for the colour of Sonic's boots?
Oh, see, I thought that you would have asked about the gloves, and that's where I was saving my Michael Jackson for.
Ah, no.
The colour of him or his shoes?
Of his shoes, his boots, yeah. While you're thinking, did you know that Sonic himself is not fast? His shoes are fast. His shoes apparently have the magical powers imbued in them, according to the manual that came with the original Sonic ones. I think later Sonic lore then messed that up because they decided he got transformed into some experiment. But anyway, random fact. Anyway, have you decided what the inspiration for his boots colour was?
Is it based on a person from pop culture?
They all are, yes.
Oh dear. I'm trying to think. I don't know many red humans. Wee Mario
is not correct. Care to take a guess?
I have no idea. I didn't even think of a person. I was thinking of something like Chub Chub Lollipops or something.
Alright, well, I mean, what colour are the boots?
Red and white.
Like, alright, what's red and white?
Like candy canes or lollipops.
Nope, no, I'm not going to give you it.
Santa!
You got it! It is actually Santa! Santa is a respect for his boots, because apparently Santa is seen as familiar and honest, and so that was the color that he made his boots. I'll give you half a point for that.
I don't even know if I should get that, because you kind of hinted towards it.
Okay, alright, my last question. I do have a tiebreaker in case this all goes horribly wrong. So Sonic is a hedgehog. We know that much. What is Knuckles?
Wee. An echidna.
He is an echidna. What is an echidna, Anton? Do you know?
I only know of Wikipedia articles about his private parts, and that's all I've learned.
Well, I learned something new about an echidna today, because I did not... So, echidnas, for those that don't know what an echidna is, kind of looks a bit like a hedgehog, but with a longer nose, lives in Australia. But the interesting thing is, it's a mammal that lays eggs. Other than a platypus, it's the only other mammal we know of that lays eggs. How cool is that?
And they have very peculiar private parts. That's also worth
they
knowing.
They do.
Google.
It is. The, yeah.
Anyway, yep. I hope everybody's enjoyed episode 136 of the Nintendo Switch UK podcast. Thank you very much for joining us and learning all about this week's news, rumours, and echidna private parts. You didn't really learn anything.
Before we shuffle off the quiz, though, I want to ask my tiebreaker. It's not for points, because let's face it, Anton has won this. Anton is now on 24 points. Mike is still ahead by half a point, and Mo's not quite in the same league as him yet, but we'll get there, because, you know, she's ramping up her skills in the quiz. I mean, a couple of points in there, that was good. It was good. We're getting better every week. The tiebreaker was going to be, and I just genuinely do think this is quite a cool question, who is faster, Sonic the Hedgehog or the Flash? Do either of you have any ideas, thoughts on the matter? Because there is a scientific answer to this.
Can you include when he pops the TV and gets the extra fast shoes? Does that count?
Sonic's maximum speed is listed in Sonic Adventures DX. It gives his top speed as 3,840 miles per hour.
Maybe Sonic? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm thinking the Flash, because if I'm correct in saying, I think Sonic is the speed of sound, and the Flash is the speed of light.
So the latest information I could find, to be fair, is dated back to 2014. It's only lore I could actually find on the Flash. So Sonic goes at 3,840 miles an hour. The Flash, as of the episode Trajectory from the Flash TV show, he has a top speed, certainly at that point, of 2,532 miles an hour, which is Mach 3.3. So Sonic is faster. Significantly faster than the Flash. So there you go. That was going to be a tiebreaker.
Wow, you learn something new every day.
I just like that question. Anyway, as Anton has already said, thank you for joining us this week. It's been a random episode. We've talked a lot about, well, weird stuff, and it's been fun. And thank you very much for joining me, Anton. Thank you very much for joining me, Mo. Thank you for listening to us through your ear holes, person that is hearing me right now. I'm going to stop talking. Anton, would you like to finish up with anything else?
Yes, for further information on how you can support us, and if you want to hear Al's first impression on the Xbox Series S, do join us on Patreon. You can learn more information at nsukp.co.uk/support-us. We also do a show called The Prequel Roundup and Expansion Chat. We also do mugs and other goodies for our most premium tier N64 members, and show notes, Discord, there's a whole lot there. Nevertheless, I hope everyone has a lovely week, and until further notice, au revoir.
Ta-da for now.
And cheerio.
I broke the order.
That was the wrong way around.